19th of May, 1536, the execution of Queen Anne Boleyn. At dawn, on the 19th of May, 1536, Queen Anne Boleyn celebrated the Mass for the last time, receiving the sacrament from her almoner, John Skip. She then ate breakfast and waited to hear Sir William Kingston's footsteps outside her door. At 8 a.m, the constable appeared, informing Anne that the hour of her death was near and that she should get herself ready. But Anne was already prepared. She'd taken special care with her outfit. The ermine trim symbolised royalty, and crimson, the colour of her kirtle, was associated with martyrdom. Her hood was the traditional English gable hood, rather than her usual stylish French hood. Anne left the sumptuous royal palace for the last time, walking past the Great Hall, through Coal Harbour Gate, and along the western side of the White Tower. There, ahead of her, was the newly erected black-draped scaffold. Kingston helped his prisoner up the scaffold steps, and Anne stepped forward to address the crowd. The crowd fell silent as they gazed at their queen, a woman with an untroubled countenance. Anne then delivered her final speech. "Good Christian people, I have not come here to preach a sermon. I've come here to die. For according to the law, and by the law, I am judged to die, and therefore I will speak nothing against it. I am come hither to accuse no man, nor to speak of that whereof I am accused and condemned to die. But I pray God save the king, and send him long to reign over you. For a gentler nor more merciful prince was there never, and to me he was ever a good, a gentle, and sovereign lord. And if any person will meddle of my cause, I require them to judge the best. And thus I take my leave of the world and of you all, and I heartily desire you all to pray for me." The speech is corroborated by Edward Hall, George Wyatt, John Fox, and Lord Herbert of Cherbury. Unlike her brother, Anne did not protest her innocence and preach to the crowd. She simply did what was expected of her. Executions were carefully choreographed with a set format for execution speeches, which Anne followed to the letter. There was no way that she would risk her daughter's safety by defying the king and proclaiming her innocence. Elizabeth's safety and her future relationship with her father the king were paramount in Anne's mind as she prepared to meet her maker. Anne paid the distressed executioner, who asked Anne's forgiveness. Her ladies then removed Anne's mantle, and Anne lifted off her gable hood. A young lady presented her with a linen cap with which she covered her hair, and she knelt down, fastening her clothes about her feet, and one of the said ladies bandaged her eyes. The crowd, who would have been well used to executions by this time, were moved by the Queen's plight, many of them crying. As Anne sank to her knees in readiness, the crowd too sank to its knees, following the example of Sir John Allen, the Lord Mayor. Only Charles Brandon, Duke of Suffolk, and Henry Fitzroy, Duke of Richmond, remained on their feet. As Anne waited for the executioner to strike, she started praying, "O Lord, have mercy on me. To God I commend my soul. To Jesus Christ I commend my soul. Lord Jesu, receive my soul." Eric Ives writes that her only show of fear was the way she kept looking behind her to check that the executioner was not going to strike the fatal blow too soon. As Anne prayed, the executioner called out to his assistant to pass him his sword. As Anne moved her head to follow what the assistant was doing, the executioner came up unnoticed behind her and beheaded her with one stroke of his sword. It was over. As the shocked crowd dispersed, Anne's ladies, who were described as bereft of their souls, such was their weakness, wrapped her head and body in white cloth, and took them to the chapel of St. Peter ad Vincula for burial. No casket had been provided, so a yeoman warder fetched an old elm chest which had once contained bow staves from the Tower Armoury. Anne Boleyn, Queen of England and mother of Elizabeth I, was then buried as a traitor in an unmarked grave. The Tower cannons fired to tell London that its queen was dead. Sir William Kingston was paid £100 by the Crown for Anne Boleyn's jewels and apparel, and that was that. One queen was dead, and another was about to take her place. Sir Francis Bryan took the news of Anne's death to her replacement, Jane Seymour. Who knows what she thought of the bloody events of those past few days? Scottish theologian Alexander Eliseus had woken up in the early hours of the 19th of May from a nightmare about the Queen's severed neck in which he could count the nerves, the veins and the arteries. He went to visit his friend, Archbishop Cranmer, in his garden at Lambeth. Eliseus was unaware of Anne's imminent execution, having remained at home since the day of Anne's imprisonment. But as he told the Archbishop of his dream, Cranmer raised his eyes to heaven and said, "She who has been the Queen of England upon earth will today become a queen in heaven." So great was his grief that he could say nothing more, and then he burst into tears. The Archbishop, who owed his rise to the patronage of the Queen and her family, was a broken man, and perhaps he felt some guilt for his part in recent events. It is hard to imagine how he would have felt on hearing the cannons ring out over London, announcing the Queen's death. Queen Anne Boleyn was gone, gone to a better place.